Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our third hour. Author Martha Cooley joins us this morning to discuss her new novel, Buy Me Love, about the eternal confusions of money and our beloved notions of free will as they play out for one woman with a lottery ticket. Martha Cooley will be the guest for a Northshire Bookstore virtual event on Tuesday, the 8th of June. She's going to do this conversation with Lynn Sharon Schwartz, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Martha Cooley to the roundtable this morning. Martha, how are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you for having me, Joe.
What a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for being with us, and it's just nice to have you here. I just realized, interestingly, and I don't even know I'm telling the story, except it's just what happened. I wrote down in the script that Martha will be the guest for a Northshire Bookstore virtual event on Tuesday, June 8th, 2005. Well, of course, that's not right. But the book, the reason I had 2005 in the mind is when the book begins, right?
Right.
So what brought you to that time and to this idea?
Well, the time was somewhat a function of looking for something bad to happen to one character. Sometimes that's how one proceeds. And I knew that I had this notion of a woman serendipitously purchasing a lottery ticket, then finding out, to her combined sort of amazement, horror, and deer in headlightness, that she's won a great deal of money. And I also knew that she had a brother who was extremely troubled, a composer. And I knew I just instinctively felt he was in a great deal of trouble, and it had to do with a loss. And as I began mulling over what that loss might have been, it seemed to me that it was probably related to the loss of his romantic partner, and that she had died in something that was politically significant and motivated. And that took me to Googling around and finding out about the attacks actually that happened in Madrid a couple of years earlier than 2005 in a train station. And so I pictured that she had died there. So that's a sort of windy answer to your good question, and maybe revealing of how writers sometimes cast around for matching up character with event.
Yeah, so let's explore that for a moment, that idea of Googling and to find out, Googling about, I believe is how you said it. So when you Google that and find the situation in Madrid and decide that you're going to write about it, first of all, tell us a little bit about that incident, and then how you said, okay, I can put my characters in the situation and have it revolve around that.
Well, I knew that all of my characters were going to be sensitive in their own ways to the larger world, not just to their private concerns, but to what was going on around them. And so the Iraq War was happening then, and simultaneously in Spain, for reasons having to do with Spain and Europe and Middle East and other politics, the incident was never really super clearly defined, its sources. But there was this attack on the train station in Madrid, and I think around 30 people died. So I imagined that had happened prior to 2005. I wanted the Iraq War to have already been going on, and I needed for another main character in the book, because there's a sort of braided narrative, as you know, Joe, in the story.
Right.
There's Ellen, the woman who wins the lottery, and then there's this young street artist, a woman who does street art, who's disturbed. And she is kind of a Googler, too, in that she's kind of obsessed with Albert Camus and his philosophy, and she sort of, in a magpie-like way, picks and chooses quotes and ideas that she finds about him. I don't identify her as having Googled, but this is how I imagined her, as not being a Camus scholar by any means. And so I knew that she would be very upset about the Iraq War, that she would be, this other character would be into Camus. And meanwhile, I have my lottery winner with her brother, whose partner died in this terrorist event. So I wanted this to sort of be in the ambience in the atmosphere of the novel without it being the central mover of plot or even of action, but just that my characters would be, as I say, sensitive to this, that reacting to it in at least in a subliminal way.
Blair is the street artist who hails from Brooklyn, New York, and the goal of the art is to derange orbits. How would you define that?
Well, for Blair, who's a character who feels quite impotent and angry in her own life, deranging mental orbits is her sense of what her street art might do, kind of get people to react and think differently than they would had they not seen her productions, which she also thinks of as ephemeral. She knows that they will be removed or eliminated or that they cannot and actually should not last. So she's a sort of agent provocateur in the book because she feels that this is the only place she has any power. It's the paradox of being invisible lends her the capacity to sort of go around and do things because she feels no one notices her. Now, that not having been noticed, not having been acknowledged or attended to has, of course, longer roots in family and in trauma from her first family and her experience of that. And I don't want to get too much into that since that might be a spoiler alert kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah.
You know, it's I love how the book is, and I realize this is sort of an inside baseball question for people who haven't read it yet, but the way the book is arranged, the way the book is set up, is you have chapters within chapters within chapters. So there's sections of 1, 2, 3, and then you have named titles, and then within that, brief chapters of numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and onward. Which means it gives it a very breezy style, and I'm curious as to how you came to that, and is it because of the nature of telling these multiple plots?
Yeah, in part, I felt that would help guide the reader to sort of, I think books sort of teach you how to read them if they're structured right, and I hope mine is, so that the reader doesn't get lost or confused. This is also a story about a poet or someone who the lottery winner is a poet, but she sort of considers herself a failed poet. Then we have the street artist whose medium is obviously the visual. And then the brother who's the brother's partner dies in Madrid, and he's a composer. So music and visual art and writing are all elements of this narrative. Again, they're not meant to bang the reader over the head with their presence, but that's what these people are into and do, and all of them feel in their own way marginalized, as I think actually many artists of all stripes do feel in our culture today for a variety of reasons, not least of which is financial. And this is a book about money,
right?
About needing it, wanting it, not wanting it, having it, not having it, all those questions. And so because the book is so centrally about money, I felt that I needed to have these different people with different money issues, and then I had to sort of organize their passage through the story in a way that would make sense. And I wanted the titled sections to have a bit of irony or whimsy to them, just to lighten it a bit, you know.
Have you personally felt marginalized when it comes to your art, to your writing?
Well, I can't say personally. I mean, I feel blessed, actually. I have, since I began acknowledging myself as a writer, I felt part of a community. And I think that, you know, artists and writers and composers all know, most of them anyway, know how to support and sustain one another, how to give aid and help of all kinds to one another. That said, I think it's very challenging to live off one's art. And I entered academia. I'm actually just retiring, having been a professor at Adelphi University, and prior to that, teaching for 15 years in the Bennington Writing Seminars up in your neck of the woods.
Go Bennington, yeah.
And those environments were extremely dear to me. Bennington remains central to me, to my consciousness of what it is to write. And so, you know, I was fortunate to have steady work that paid bills, but an awful lot of artists don't, and really scramble, really hustle. I know my MFA students who I admire profoundly for their courage and their persistence, you know, have a hard time of it. Unless you're independently wealthy, you know, it's a struggle.
And yet, this book does not make you, at the end of it, I'm not like, ooh, I'm going to go buy lottery tickets and hope I win.
Really? Gosh, I always do that. No, I'm just kidding. Although my relation to lottery tickets has become a bit wonky lately. You know, the fantasies are there and hard to strip out when you've been living with a character to whom this has happened. But
yeah, no,
lottery tickets are not for any aspiring writers, artists out there listening. Lottery tickets are not the way to go. You know, the wisest thing my agent ever said to me was, don't ever quit your day job. And I would pass along that counsel. It's tough. It's tough.
You know, I've heard this described, just to the lottery aspect of this, of that you, because you're writing about money, the idea of the most fun of buying a lottery ticket is the discussion of what you're going to do with it if you win. And then the most miserable section is if you actually win, and we know this by numbers, that most lives are ruined by it. So, I guess that you sort of keep that in the back of your mind as you're writing about a character
this? Yeah, I mean, I knew right from the start that I didn't want to write a book about someone who wins the lottery and then have to play out what she does with the money.
Right.
I mean, that just seemed tedious beyond all words. And I was interested in the kind of pressure that someone would be put under mentally, emotionally, in that period of time between the oh my God moment and the I got to take the ticket in moment.
Right.
And that's what interested me when the way I sort of thought about it was that's when her mental furniture is getting rearranged. And when she had to sort of confront the fact that the real issue wasn't what she would do with her life, but what she had been doing with it and how that would and should change. And so, you know, that's where the pressure, the heat, the forward motion of the book came for me, not thinking about the what after. And that's why the book is really set within that 30-day period.
Well, the book is great fun. I want to remind folks that you will be doing a virtual event Tuesday, June 8th at, what time is it? At 7 o'clock, I believe. At Northshire Bookstore. You can find out more information by going to northshire.org, northshire.org, and can find out more information there. The new book is Buy Me Love by Martha Cooley. It's published by Red Hen Press. Martha, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. It's been great.
Great pleasure having you here. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Buy Me Love. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.